I'm Marty Moscowain. Welcome to Radio Times. There is little mystery about who is going to win the governor's race in New Jersey tomorrow. Chris Christie maintains a commanding lead over his Democratic challenger, Barbara Buono. What is mysterious is why a conservative Republican like Christie is so popular in such a solidly blue liberal Democrat voting state. We asked Matt Katz to join us, get us started in this hour of Radio Times. He's been covering Chris Christie for the Philadelphia Inquirer, blogs at Christie Chronicles. And Matt Katz, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks a lot, Marty.
Any surprises about who's going to win tomorrow?
Absolutely not. There are three new polls out today, and they have Christie up by a minimum of 20 points and another all the way up to 36 points.
Wow.
So, I mean, this looks to be not only a Christie victory, but a blowout.
And would it be fair to say that Barbara Buono's party, her Democratic Party, abandoned her? It seems like she did not get much support.
She did not, up and down the line. From President Obama, who came to Asbury Park in the right before the primary to hang out with Christie and ignored Buono. He hasn't said a word publicly about her. The national Democratic organizations have barely given her campaign any money. And that extends all the way down into New Jersey. 60 elected Democrats have formally endorsed the governor, and some of the more significant power brokers in the state, the people who control a lot of the votes in the legislature, are also either outwardly supporting Christie or kind of subtly supporting Christie.
And is that because Christie sort of takes all the oxygen out of the room, or is there something that she did wrong to not get the kind of support that she obviously was looking for?
I think it's both. I think he's been working these relationships with key Democrats and Democratic power brokers from as soon as he was elected in 2009. And he's cultivated these relationships. He's made deals and you could say he made deals, and it was a tit for tat transaction. He would say he was being bipartisan and working with the members of the other party who control the legislature. And they've grown to there's a personality similarity with some of these Democrats that run the state. They agree on some things. Some of them are on the little bit on the conservative side on issues like education. So they've allied with the governor on that kind of stuff. And they also think he's going to win. So they want to be with the winner. And Barbara Buono has never had the relationships with the party that are needed to run a statewide race. And she's also probably made a few missteps here and there, failing to really kind of finding a coherent message to go and attack Christie on.
And how do you understand the public's clear support for Chris Christie? And as I said in my intro, kind of framing this, which is that he's a conservative Republican, and New Jersey, unlike Pennsylvania, is a very blue state.
Yeah, the extraordinary thing about this is if you were to ask most New Jerseyans issue by issue whether they agree with the positions that Christie has taken, they would say they disagree. They are far more in line with Barbara Buono than they are with Chris Christie. But the polls indicate that particularly after Sandy, a year ago and a week, 53 weeks ago, the public, including many Democrats, independents, people of all ethnic backgrounds, started to turn toward Christie and trust him more than ever. They like him personally because he worked with the president in the waning days of a presidential campaign. They trust him. They don't associate him with some of the more extreme conservatives in the country. They think he's one of them, and they know nothing about Barbara Buono because she's had no money to get on the air to tell them about her.
So do you think his personality trumps policy?
I mean, when you ask people, I absolutely do. I mean, the people say they like him. They really like him. They think he's funny. They think he's strong. They think he's made New Jersey. People's perspective on New Jersey has improved since he's been in office. They feel better about themselves, according to polls at least, and that's something that Christie harps on. And because of that, there's this likability there, even among Democrats.
So he has a kind of joisy personality.
That's right. People definitely feel that he is one of them and is a true Jersey guy.
Well, there's no mystery about his interest in national politics and maybe even the White House. As you follow Christie around, and assuming he wins tomorrow, and it certainly looks like he will, do you think he'll complete his 4 years? Any way to know?
There is a scenario where he could. I mean, I do certainly think he's running for president. There seems to be a little doubt about that right now. I mean, even his denials aren't very strong anymore about whether or not he's running. And if he does, he might not necessarily have to resign. Bill Clinton and George Bush, before they became president, they were governors, and they actually didn't resign until after they were elected. However, he running for office is in 2016, as it will be, is a more than a full-time job, and New Jersey running the state is also more than a full-time job, so he might be forced to, and then, of course, if he wins, he would resign. And then that would lead to Lieutenant Governor Kim Godano would end up taking over the state, and also while he's campaigning for president, she would end up running the state. And she is something of a mystery to voters. She doesn't really talk to the press, and she hasn't done any interviews in the home stretch or press conferences. But voters don't seem to care. Actually, voters want him to run for president, and they don't seem to care that he might only be around for a couple of years, and then some woman they never heard of might be governor. That doesn't matter to them at this point.
Matt, where will you be tomorrow?
I will be in Asbury Park. Christie is having his victory celebration at Boardwalk Hall, and it's supposed to be a big blowout. And, of course, Christie is a huge Springsteen fan, and even though Springsteen's a big liberal, they became friends after Sandy. So the rumor, which I doubt will come true, is that Springsteen shows up in Asbury Park at Christie's victory party.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow. Matt, as always, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times. I should say, has been covering Chris Christie for the Philadelphia Inquirer, blogging at Christie Chronicles. And I should say to you, Matt Katz, welcome to radio. Starting next week, you'll be reporting for WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio about Chris Christie.
That's right, Marty. Thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. And again, Matt Katz joining us as we talk about elections tomorrow. Well, while the media spotlight is on the New Jersey governor's race, Pennsylvania has some elections tomorrow, too. There's a DA and controller's race here in Philadelphia and races for local offices across the state. Voters will be asked about retaining state Supreme Court Chief Justice Ron Castile and Justice Max Baer, who are both nearing the mandatory retirement age. And it's never too early to talk about the governor's race next year in Pennsylvania. Incumbent Tom Corbett looks vulnerable, and he faces a whole slew of challengers. Well, joining us to talk about Pennsylvania by telephone is John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. You can read his blog at Baer Growls. And, John, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Happy election eve.
Indeed. Dave Davies here with us in our Philadelphia studios. He is senior reporter for WHYY, a contributor and fill-in host for Fresh Air with Terry Gross. And, Dave, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Always good to be here. Hello, John.
Hello, Dave.
And to our listeners, any questions or comments about Pennsylvania and its politics, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. And Dave, since we're here in Philadelphia, two races tomorrow for district attorney and for controller.
Right. It might come as a surprise to some citizens, but yeah, there is an election. The city charter decided that these are two offices that would be run at 2 years removed from the election of the main city officials, mayor and city council. The two officials are the elected district attorney, the countywide prosecutor, that is currently Seth Williams, an incumbent who won 4 years ago and seems well poised to win re-election. He's done some things and hasn't made any big enemies, so he seems poised to retain the office. City controller is the elected fiscal watchdog. He's the official auditor. Also is important in that he has a tie-breaking vote on the city's municipal pension fund, which is a big financial deal everywhere these days. Also has a seat on the city gasworks, the city gas commission, and other boards. So it's an important position. It's held by Alan Butkiewicz, who's held it for two terms. Again, done a lot of things. He's ruffled some feathers and made some enemies, including the mayor in recent years. But he is likely to win over his Republican challenger, Terry Tracy, who's a young man who's a graduate of the Fell School and has been in private business. He's a smart, well-spoken, up-and-coming guy. The Republican running for district attorney is Danny Alvarez, a former district attorney. And the Republicans have sort of tried to get their act together in recent years, but it doesn't look like they've raised enough money or made enough noise to to challenge the Democratic incumbents. Although, you got to go through this, and in a low turnout election, the Republicans say, if we get our people to the votes, we can make some noise. We'll see.
Yeah, and John Baer, from your perspective, does the DA's race or controller's race in Philadelphia, does that have any reverberations across the Commonwealth?
Marty, it doesn't have any reverberations in Philadelphia. Why would it have reverberations across the Commonwealth? No, as I try to remind my editors and you every time I'm on,
I know.
Philadelphia is Philadelphia, Pennsylvania is Pennsylvania.
But it is interesting, and as Dave has written and also just said, is that the Republican Party in Philadelphia trying to rebuild itself. And I'd just be curious from your perspective, John, and whether you think that the party has a chance in this very Democratic city.
I have literally had one conversation, and it was with the chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican Party, and it was maybe 3 or 4 months ago, who said, look, this Alvarez guy in Philly running for DA is going to, shock the world. And I haven't heard a word since.
Would that be John Taylor?
No, the chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican Party is Rob Gleason.
I gotcha. But I know, Dave, you've talked to John Taylor.
Yeah, and I'll just mention that, Rob, there has been this battle within the Philadelphia Republican Party for about 5 years. And it's been sort of interesting because the traditional leadership, the Meehan family, insiders will know, ran the Republican Party for generations. Mr. Gleason, the state party, and some others mounted a kind of an inside effort to overturn the existing leaders, along with some local folks who felt that the Republicans had gotten lazy, too willing to compromise with the Democrats. And their opinion is, look, We're underdogs, but you will never build the party if you don't contest, even for races where there is little hope. You get smart candidates, and you run good campaigns, and you make a name, and that's what they're hoping to do. They're not off to a great start here.
But we should say about a minute before our first break here, but these are two, I guess, watchdog jobs, would you say, the DA and the controller?
In part, yeah. I mean, the controller is explicitly a watchdog job. The district attorney is the countywide prosecutor. I mean, mostly concerned with all of the enforcement of criminal statutes, which is a huge waterfront. But a part of what that job involves is keeping track of government spending and the political community. And you can make an argument that it would be smart to have someone from the other party doing that. The other thing I'll just add, Marty, about this effort of Republicans to re-energize the party and be more effective is that, I mean, I can remember, you can probably remember, at a time when Republicans were a force in this town. I mean, they held a lot of legislative seats. They competed even in citywide elections. And that's all changed. And the problem with trying to turn it around is that the National Party isn't helping them much. And in fact, John Taylor, the state representative who is the new chairman of the city Republican Party, has said, we're not getting a lot of help from the National Party. When people like Ted Cruz want to shut down the government, don't care about anything except holding the line on taxes and cutting spending, that's just not a message that sells very well in Philadelphia.
Well, we are talking about Philadelphia and Pennsylvania politics, and there is an election tomorrow. That's Dave Davies, a very familiar voice here at WHYY, senior reporter for WHYY, joining us by telephone, John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. After this very short break, we'll be talking about the state Supreme Court. And we want to take your call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY comes from Delaware Valley College. Delaware Valley College offers a Master of Arts in Policy Studies that prepares students to take leadership roles in developing policies to address important issues impacting our communities. Students can choose from food and agriculture, sustainability and environment, or community and international development. More information about a Master of Arts in Policy Studies is available online at delval.edu/grad.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, a food writer and proud Southerner shares recipes from his mother's kitchen and her secret to longevity.
She was going strong, drinking Jack Daniels every day, eating fried chicken, you name it, fried grits, fried okra.
Fried everything. Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit have been studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders since 1964 and are currently performing research to develop improved treatments. Symptoms may include mood swings, low energy, and low motivation. Initial evaluations are offered to determine those who are eligible for treatment. More about Penn's Depression Research Unit at 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Mosco, and again, talking with Dave Davies from WHYY and John Baer from the Philadelphia Daily News about Pennsylvania politics and the fact that tomorrow there is an election here in this state. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. John, I do want to talk about the state Supreme Court. What adjective would you use to describe that court?
Troubled.
Troubled.
It has a history of problems, and they've seemed to become a little more concentrated in recent years, not only with the conviction of one of its justices who is under house arrest in Pittsburgh, Justice Ori Melvin, caught up in the statewide scandal involving the use of public dollars for campaign funds and campaigns, and also the, as reported in the Inquirer, an ongoing investigation of sitting Justice McCaffrey, who is being reportedly investigated because he and his wife conspired to collect fees for referring attorneys to cases, apparently some of which that he was actually involved with on the bench. Mm-hmm. This court, Marty, is, I believe, the oldest court in the nation. It predates the United States Supreme Court, and it has the broad legal authority to decide the most, just like the U.S. Supreme Court, the most compelling legal cases that face the citizens of the Commonwealth, and yet its members are elected statewide. Right. In a state like this, it is almost impossible to have any sort of public debate or public say in who these people are, because they tend to come from big media markets, they tend to be supported by major law firms and big deal lawyers, and they're elected almost in the absence of democracy.
Well, and that's saying a lot there. But, Dave, let me ask you a couple of questions about Ron Castile. He sat on the court for a couple of decades now. He's been Chief Justice since 2008. My understanding, based on your reporting, is that he will turn, well, there's no question about this, he'll turn 70 next year, and that's, I guess, the mandatory retirement age.
Right. He'll serve until the end of 2014 if he is retained for right. another 10-year term, which essentially means he's asking voters to retain him for another 10-year term, of which he will serve only one.
There is that a curious ask?
Well, it's not entirely unusual. I mean, other justices have run for 10-year terms knowing that they would not legally be able to serve the full term. I mean, 1 year is probably – I don't know of anybody else who's been in quite that position. There was a legal challenge to the mandatory retirement requirement. It's kind of stalled. I don't think it's completely done for, but it doesn't look like there's any little chance – there's much chance of success, and to change it in the state constitution would take a couple of years. So it looks like he is going to have to retire, and it is a little bit of a strange ask. But I think, you know, what he says is, I got things I want to do. I'm the most experienced justice. You don't want to lose me. I think part of this, frankly, is about a rivalry with Justice McCaffrey, who John Baer mentioned. He is a Philadelphia justice. And, you know, these guys don't just issue listen to cases and issue decisions. They administer a massive kind of administrative structure of tens of thousands of court employees across the Commonwealth, and there are jobs and contracts at stake. So this is a very political set of decisions, and the Philadelphia courts have essentially been run by Castile. I think the title is liaison to the Philadelphia court system. McCaffrey would love to have that job, and I kind of think one of the things that Castile wants to do is for one more year to ice McCaffrey out of influence over the Philadelphia court system, the jobs and hiring and contracts that go with it. Now, as John mentioned, McCaffrey probably has some serious problems of his own in terms of investigations of his conduct, but I think that's part of what's motivating Castile.
Do you think it's personal, John?
I think with Ron Castile, everything is personal. I mean, he is, you know, he is a very intense individual, always has been when he was the district attorney of Philadelphia and since sitting on this bench. And look, if you are the Supreme Court Chief Justice, there is a certain amount of kind of built-in ego to get you there, but once you're there, that ego is fed by everyone connected with the legal profession in every town, city, and borough in the state. So, I mean, he's coming at this with an awful lot of himself in it. And the question is, I know his answer is, look, I have things to do and I have things to clean up. One of the questions would be, well, why didn't you do them in the long time that you were, you know, that you were there? So, but look, I mean, these retention elections almost never get any attention. So, and I don't feel any sense of citizen outrage about the, because about the only thing that people would know about would be the 70 retirement thing, and it doesn't seem like a big deal. So it's hard to imagine that he won't be retained tomorrow. But it is sort of an interesting and unusual case, as Dave suggested.
Is Max Baer any relation to you, John Baer?
I always when I see him, I always say Uncle Max. But he doesn't seem to want to.
He doesn't claim you as a nephew.
More importantly, is he related to the actor who played Jethro on Beverly Hillbillies? He is, isn't he, John?
I'm not sure.
Are you starting a rumor, Dave Davies?
No, this was written about when he first ran, and I can't remember what the answer was. I'm embarrassed, and I thought John would know. Oh, well.
Well, I mean,
leave that hanging.
His name was Max Baer as well, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Once we get by the salutatory hello, he doesn't seem interested in talking with me. So, well, I've never had that discussion, but I'll try next time, Dave.
Well, we want to get to the bottom of this, John. Let me ask you, though, a question about Joan Ori Melvin, because she was indicted. Apparently, I guess it's under house arrest. She's at home. Is that right?
That's right.
But she also, there was a probation violation because she hadn't written her apology letter. And she was basically found guilty in the summer. What's taking her so long?
It's hard to say. It's just an odd thing. It was one of the provisions of her house arrest was this unusual order by the judge that she write a personal letter of apology and include a photograph of her in handcuffs to like 500 judges. Her argument, and it's a legal argument, is she's appealing her case. So if she apologizes for something she claims she didn't do, she could prejudice the appeal. So she has been reluctant to go ahead and send out those love notes, and has since been charged with parole probation violation. So, and that's again before the courts.
We have an email from Mark. If Castile is reelected, it then steps down. Does Corbett appoint a replacement? What about if he is not reelected? And Dave, can you take that one? What would happen, I guess, in either scenario?
Yeah, well, I mean, as John says, there's just no chance that he won't be retained. Right. That's only happened once, and it was a very special circumstance. When he is retired, then the governor would appoint a replacement, and then the position would be filled at the next odd-numbered year, which would be 2015, right, John?
Right.
So he'd be appointed.
Right. He would be appointed by the governor, correct.
To finish out the nine
until 2015, in which there would be an election. The Democrats and the Republicans would both have statewide primaries, when we would have this absurd process of electing judges that we always go through. and then there would be a general election in November of 2015, and then we'd have a new justice.
But do you share John Baer's view of electing judges in Pennsylvania, Dave?
I do. I think it's absurd. I mean, nobody knows
because
who
no
they're
one
really
knows
voting
who you're
for,
voting
and
for
so
or
the
what?
Decisions are made by on things other than merit.
Well, we are talking about the fact that Pennsylvania is having an election tomorrow. And in just a moment or two, I do want to play an ad campaign that I guess has reemerged about voter ID in Pennsylvania. But I do need to reintroduce our guest, Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY, a contributor and fill-in host for Fresh Air with Terry Gross. And he will be analyzing the Pennsylvania returns tomorrow night here on WHYY. John Baer joining us by telephone. We're going to buy you a new phone one day, John. Political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. He blogs at Baer Growls, and that can be found at philly.com. And we do want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Well, let me play a TV ad that is now back on the airwaves. This has to do with Pennsylvania's voter ID law. It's still in Commonwealth Court, but the Pennsylvania Department of State has relaunched this ad. Let's listen.
If you care about this election.
If you care about this election. If you have an opinion.
If you want a voice.
If you want a voice.
If you want to make a difference.
Then show it.
Show it.
Show it.
Show it.
When voting this election day, you will be asked but not required to show a photo ID. To learn more about how to get a free photo ID from PennDOT driver license centers, even if you were unable to get one in the past, call 1-877-VOTES-PA or visit votespa.com.
So, Dave, when people go to the polls, they will be asked but not required to show their voter ID.
That's the rule, although I don't get asked when I'm in Philadelphia, when I vote in Philadelphia, and I think that's probably true a lot of the places. I mean, people will remember that there was a Pennsylvania passed a tough voter ID law, which was then stayed by the state Supreme Court last year. I think that's now in the hands of a Commonwealth Court judge, Bernard McGinley, who is who held a hearing and will eventually rule on this. And so, but the ad that you just played is controversial because a lot of folks believe that it makes people think they need an ID to vote. I mean, I think it's defensible in that if we are eventually going to have this requirement, it would be smart if people knew to go ahead and get it and tell and get some information on how to do it. But there is a question about whether you want to spend $1 million telling people to show it.
To show it. Well, how do you see this, Ed, John?
Marty, I see it as if you were flying down the Pennsylvania Turnpike looking at flashing signs that said, at the next toll exit, you will be asked but not required to pay a toll. And so, you know, at 70 miles an hour, you're trying to figure out, well, do I fish around for, you know, find my easy pass? Do I look for some money or what? It's very confusing. We do not have a requirement to show an ID. We should not have ads saying that we don't have a requirement.
And it's sort of framed as if you care. I mean, if you care about elections,
right.
then you're going to be asked to show.
If you want a voice. Yeah.
But, I mean, I know the Department of State sees this as part of an ongoing education campaign. But, John, I mean, this is still a very loaded issue in Pennsylvania.
And will be. And I'm surprised it's still hanging around. I mean, if I were the incumbent governor, and you may be surprised to know he rarely takes my advice, I would have gotten rid of this thing before I had started into a reelection campaign because it is controversial, no matter how it turns out. It ultimately will get to the Supreme Court and likely will be decided before we vote in 2014. I mean, there's a good chance of that. If it is or if it isn't, it's still going to be a campaign issue, one that I don't think plays well for him.
Well, and I do want to segue, as you very perfectly launched us into a discussion about Governor Corbett, but just a quick question to you, Dave Davies. Looking at this voter ID, however it is decided, it does underscore the important role that Pennsylvania plays in national elections and electing a president and who gets elected to Congress and all of that.
Right. I mean, and that's why there was such intense emotional debate over it in 2012 when it appeared we might have a voter ID requirement during the presidential election. So, yeah, it'll be a big deal, and it's not clear in the end exactly who it helps and who it hurts, because I think there's no doubt that there are some people who are disproportionately Democratic who don't get to vote. I mean, I think most people who vote most of the time have ID. But there's also the effect of energizing the Democratic base. I mean, people got really ticked off about that, and I think it probably had some effect on turnout. So
we'll see. John, let me toss back to you. Governor Corbett, his approval ratings are pretty low among likely Republican voters. What's his problem with his base?
Well, the problem with the base, he has multiple problems. The problem with the base is the base doesn't think he's been conservative enough. The base doesn't think he has argued strongly enough or provided enough leadership on issues that they care deeply about, such as right to work, such as pro-life, and such as selling off the state stores. But his problems go well beyond the base. In his defense, Marty, nobody's numbers are particularly good right now. I mean, voters are just generally annoyed at anybody in public office. And the latest Franklin and Marshall poll that showed the governor's excellent or good number at about 19%, look, incumbent Senator Pat Toomey is only at 22% in that area. And Bob Casey is only at 30%. I don't know what he did to tick people off. But so, I mean, he begins this race on Wednesday, Governor Corbett, that is, really in the hole. And it will be fun to watch to see if he can crawl out of it to get to somewhere of a level playing field to even take on any generic Democrat, or to see whether his image is so embedded now with Pennsylvania voters that there's no way to come back from the kind of polling numbers that he's been drawing for the last several months.
Dave?
You know, there's something I'd be interested in getting your reaction to, John Bear. I mean, it seems to me that that Tom Corbett came into office not really very interested in governing. I mean, he'd been a lifetime prosecutor, and he has some basic, simple principles. We hold the line on taxes. We cut spending. We let, you know, Marcellus shale gas drilling proceed. But when you don't really aren't that interested in governing, A, you don't get that steeped in policy issues yourself. You don't hire a staff that are really good at developing and analyzing policy. You don't hire people who know how to deal with the legislative process and work with those folks. And his press secretary, Kevin Harley, initially, you know, a nice enough guy, but just didn't even return reporters' phone calls. And it just struck me that in the first 2 years that when you do that, Corbett kind of seeds the field to people with other agendas. And then when you do need to have an impact on something, you're way behind the eight ball. I mean, look at the handling of the Medicaid thing. He just didn't do anything, and then realized, hey, I need to do something. I don't know, John, what do you think?
Yeah, what do you think, John?
That's a great summation of the first couple of years. But remember, for the Republican base and for a lot of conservative Pennsylvanians, that's exactly what they want. They want
right.
a governor who doesn't do governing. They want keep taxes low. They don't want any new programs. They don't want to fix the roads. That, you know, part of the problem in getting a transportation bill is you can't deal with people that don't want anything. You can't go into their district and say, look, if we pass this, I'm going to give you this bridge. Hell, we'll name it after you. They don't want that. They don't want any government spending. So you're absolutely right. I mean, your description of how Governor Corbett has governed or not governed so far is very accurate. But for the base and for a lot of Pennsylvanians, that's what he said he would do, and that's what they want him to do.
But he, John, though, he wants to deal with the state's bridges and roads. He wants to privatize the state sewer system. He wants to privatize a lottery. I mean, there are some things that Governor Corbett says he wants. He hasn't gotten them yet.
Yeah. Well, he says he wants to fix the roads, but only on the terms that that Republicans are offering, which is a linkage to reducing the prevailing wage on some state taxes. I mean, if he wants to fix the roads, get the prevailing wage out of the way and fix the roads.
How about Kathleen Kane? How much of a thorn is she in his side?
she is a crown of thorns.
Is she?
For him, yeah. Kathleen Kane has become a viral politician in Pennsylvania. Anything she says or does, and Dave, you know this is true, it just circulates around everywhere, draws all kinds of comments from all sides. People have made the point that she's been more of a policy person and more of a governor than the governor has been, and the governor has been more of an attorney general than Kathleen.
That's interesting.
Because she's a natural politician. She has a great feel for what plays and what doesn't. He is not a natural politician. He's a natural prosecutor. And so she's opposed him on everything from trying to privatize the lottery to the defense of DOMA, to, you know, anything that the governor wants to do that touches her, she's not interested in. And so she's created this sort of Tom and Jerry matchup here that gets a lot of attention and a lot of press, and I imagine she's going to continue to do that. We're still awaiting her review of the Sandusky case and whether or not that touches the governor's reelect or not.
Well, we're going to take another short break, get back to our conversation talking about Pennsylvania politics with John Baer and Dave Davies, and we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the Rehoboth Beach Independent Film Festival, November 6th through the 10th, showcasing 100 American and international features, documentaries, short films, and seminars, all at the beach in Delaware. Details at rehobothfilm.com.
Iranian-American journalist Hooman Maj writes that the path of the Iranian revolution, modernity fused with religion, is unique in the world. On the next Fresh Air, he describes his year in Tehran with his wife and child. His new book is called The Ministry of Guidance Invites You to Not Stay. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
People wandering around in deep distress, broken windows, filthy mattresses, bed bugs, all found in facilities housing people with mental illnesses.
Everybody has their problems. Bipolar, schizophrenia. but the place is not there to help you. They can care less about the problems that individuals have and the needs the individual has.
On the next Voices in the Family, a look at boarding homes. Today at noon here on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, The Economist, covering news and ideas that interconnect the world to give readers a worldview. On newsstands, in bookstores, at economist.com, or on smartphones and tablets.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Tomorrow is an off year election, coming just 12 months after a presidential election. Talking with the two smart and seasoned journalists, as we call them. Dave Davies, currently a senior reporter for WHYY, a contributor and fill-in host for Fresh Air with Terry Gross. And again, we'll be analyzing the Pennsylvania returns tomorrow night here on WHYY. John Baer joining us by telephone, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. His blog, Bear Growls, can be found at philly.com. Wrote a memoir called On the Front Lines of Pennsylvania Politics, 25 Years of Keystone Reporting, or as a Keystone Reporter. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Dave, let me turn back to you because, and I have a long list of people that at least want to toss their hats into the ring. Allison Schwartz, Rob McCord. This would be to challenge Tom Corbett, Kathleen McGinty. I don't know if this is an old list. Max Myers, John Hanger, Tom Wolf, Ed Pawlowski, Joanne Litz, Jack Wagner, Mike Stack, Scott Conklin. I don't know if I got them all, but
Stack's out now. He wants to run for lieutenant governor, but okay. He wasn't never much of a player anyway.
Okay, but that is no, at least a running
very
list.
Long list, and four or five that you have to take seriously who have some kind of a profile and experience and can raise some money. So it's going to be a rumble. And, you know, I think Allison Schwartz, the congresswoman who has decided not to seek re-election for her seat here in the Delaware Valley, is probably regarded as the front runner, in part simply because she's better known in the part of the state where so many Democratic votes are concentrated.
Which would be here.
Yeah, in Philadelphia and the four surrounding counties. I mean, she's very well known in this media market. And, you know, she's proven herself to be a sharp and savvy politician. She's gotten elected. She's gotten elected in some competitive races in her career. And so I think a lot of people think she's the one to beat. McCord strikes an impressive
treasurer.
Kind of, yeah, state treasurer and can raise some money. Tom Wolf is a businessman that people don't know very well, but has said he will put, $10 million into this thing?
Wow.
I mean, you have to take that seriously. And so in a state this big, I mean, I think to get known, you need television still, I think, probably. And so it's going to some extent come down to who can raise a lot of money, and there are no limits on campaign contribution in the state. But Baer knows this stuff better. I'd like to hear what he thinks.
Me too. Go ahead, John.
Well, no, Dave is right. I mean, I agree with everything Dave said. The caveat for Allison is Jack Wagner, who I do not think will get in, but he's run for a lot of things. He was the Auditor General two terms. He just ran for mayor in Pittsburgh. He lost in a primary. He ran for governor in the past and ran for lieutenant governor. He's a popular guy, good guy, very solid Pennsylvania credentials, a veteran who's pro-life, pro-labor, pro-gun, but a Democrat, which plays very well in western Pennsylvania. If Wagner got on the primary ticket, he wins because western Pennsylvania, he'd be the only western Pennsylvania candidate. Nobody west of Harrisburg has heard of any of these people, including Allison Schwartz, except maybe in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So Wagner easily wins the primary. But Jack knows that is not a victory because you win the primary and then you go up against a very well-financed western Pennsylvania candidate, Tom Corbett. So I don't think Wagner gets in. So then the question becomes, of the four, maybe five, who are serious contenders who will raise enough money to be competitive, who emerges next May as the Democratic nominee? Anybody who tells you that they can tell you that right now, it doesn't know what they're talking about. You don't know the effect of a $10 million campaign by Tom Wolf, who served in government, was the revenue secretary under Ed Rendell, who has a company that is the largest manufacturer of cabinetry in the United States of America,
who
lives in the house his grandfather built in a little town called Mount Wolf, named for his family, in York County.
And made a decision to rebuild and keep those jobs in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it's a great story. He was running in the last cycle. He was going to run 4 years ago. And when he went to work for Rendell, he put all of his assets in a blind trust and sold his company.
Hmm.
just as they were getting ready to kick off his campaign, he got a call to say the company was on the verge of bankruptcy, and in just 2 years after he left it, he said, I can't run, I got to buy the company back. He did, saved all the jobs. I mean, it's a terrific personal story, which you will see a lot of, I suspect, in campaign ads. His problem is he's very low-key personally. And unfortunately, politics in America today demands the whole package. They demand somebody who's attractive. They demand somebody who can relate to people. They demand somebody who looks the part. They demand somebody who sounds aggressive. You know, if we were interviewing for the job of governor, Tom Wolf would be the next governor of Pennsylvania. But we're not. We're going to have a campaign, and we're going to have debates, and we're going to have television ads. And I have no idea who wins that primary.
John, do you have any idea who Corbett fears the most? Who would give him the biggest run for his money?
Anybody but Allison.
Anyone, Allison.
Yeah, so, I think that they are praying that Allison Schwartz is the nominee. Privately, they say so. Publicly, they say, that's not up to us. That's up to the Democratic voter. But they would love to run against Allison only because she has a long record of public service, which means votes. And she has a liberal voting record, both in the state Senate and in the Congress. They can put up every tax vote she ever did, every pro-choice vote she ever did, refer back to the fact that she worked at a women's health clinic, and that will be, you know, there's a, the race then becomes about her. If the race is about Corbett's opponent, Corbett stands a much better chance to win than if the race is about Corbett.
And this, I think, Dave, just underscores how this part of Pennsylvania is so different from the other part. This always comes up when we have John Baer on the phone, which is that she might play well in this part of Pennsylvania, but, you know, go 50 miles to the west, and it's a different story.
Right. And one of the interesting questions will be to what extent, you know, kind of social issues cut in a general election, whether and, you know, antipathy towards her past in running a women's health clinic that provided abortions, whether that becomes a big issue. That'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and now there...
And the changing demographic of the state. I mean, is the state still mired in that kind of social conservatism that it has been for so long? And look, every campaign has a window. If there's a window in this campaign, Republicans continue to say stupid things about women. If a window opens in October and you have a woman candidate on the ballot, if it's Allison Schwartz or Katie McGinney, the ball game can change in a matter of hours.
And those are very, very fluid issues. And that's John Baer, again, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, joining us with Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY, giving a sneak preview of the governor's race here in Pennsylvania next year. And we've been talking about some of the local issues and some of the local races. And yes, folks, there is an election tomorrow. We do want to hear from you. Are you planning on voting or not? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Dave, this is also looking ahead, which is that there are some folks who are already lining up to take Allison Schwartz's seat.
Right, right. Right. She is not running for re-election, so there will be a Democratic primary next May, which I think most folks would say will probably dictate the winner. The way that seat now rests, it's a primary, it's a heavily Democratic seat. It's about half in Montgomery County and about half in Northeast Philadelphia. And there are four credible candidates. Kind of the best known probably is Marjorie Margolis, who held that seat 20 years ago and famously lost it after taking a tough budget vote for Bill Clinton. She is she has connections to the Clintons going back then, but an even deeper connection in that her son is married to Chelsea Clinton, daughter of Hillary and Bill. And so it's widely believed that the Hillary and Bill celebrity star power and fundraising machine will weigh in heavily on her behalf. And so I think a lot of folks see her as a front runner. But you have other you know, candidates who have something to say. Dalen Leach, a state senator from Montgomery County, who, by the way, has the funniest campaign video you'll ever see.
Posted on your
site.
Go
to my blog, off-mic, on newsworks.org if you want to watch it.
That's very funny.
And Brendan Boyle, a young up-and-coming legislator from Northeast Philadelphia. I mean, it's he's accomplished some things. I think it's an uphill climb for him, but he's the only Philadelphia candidate, and if the Philadelphia organization helps, he's got a shot. And then a woman named Valerie Arkush, who is a physician who has been very active on health policy issues and has shown some charisma and ability to raise money. So that'll be an interesting contest.
Anything you see from your perch, John, as you look at that particular contest?
No, I mean, I've talked to a couple of the candidates in there, and the question, and maybe Dave can illuminate a little bit on this, how much of the district is Northeast Philadelphia? How much is Montgomery County? The Boyle, the brothers Boyle have a pretty good street operation, are pretty well known in the city. If there are more Democratic voters in the city, maybe that's going to be a little bit, you know, better for Brendan Boyle than we think.
Yeah, I think it's about even, Stephen, between Montgomery County and Philadelphia voters, and that is the Boyle shot. I mean, he's not terribly well known, but you know, a congressional election is something in between a kind of ground-level neighborhood contest like a city council election and then a media contest, because media matters. On the other hand, it's expensive, and you're only buying a part of the audience. And so the extent to which you are known to local officials and the extent to which you have a ground game and can connect with folks through local media and canvassing matters. And Boyle might have a leg up in Northeast Philly. And if the rest of the Montgomery County votes split among the other three, maybe he has a shot.
Let me throw out a couple of odds and ends. And this is to you, John Baer. There is a bill somewhere in the legislature that, if passed, all public school buildings would be required to have the words "In God We Trust," emblazoned on them. Where did this come from?
It came from the same person who was a sponsor of the Year of the Bible resolution, which ended up with a press conference and people apologizing for voting for it, led to litigation from all sides, both the pro-God people and the ACLU. It's one of those things. It's almost, Marty, as if they say, look, we can't do anything, so we'll do something. Here, put "In God You Trust" up. Jim Robach, the state representative from Philadelphia, Democrat, who's the Democratic chairman of the House Education Committee, had a great line. He said, fine, we'll just stick a dollar bill on the wall in each school.
But does this have a chance of passage, or is this just...
Of course it does.
Oh, I mean, okay.
It makes no sense. And it's a mandate that nobody should have to comply with, and it could cost money. So naturally, it has a chance.
Well, and the ACLU would of course push back
on
something
like
that.
And then we'll go into litigation so that we can spend more of our tax dollars on lawyers.
And the governor signs it?
I don't think the governor signs it. And I'm being facetious in saying that it goes anywhere. I think once people realize the potential implications that it could have, both legally and financially, I think common sense prevails. Look, the Senate, we fortunately have an adult in the room. The Pennsylvania Senate actually sometimes shows some whiffs of responsibility, and I don't think they'd go along with this.
Let me see what Rosina from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. Rosina, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I tuned in because I wanted to hear about tomorrow's race, and I do intend to vote, and at the beginning of the hour, you kind of blew it off like you were not expecting many voters. And when you talked about the controller, you just breezed over it. And the person who's running, I forget his name, it's like Tracy Terry or Terry Tracy. Mm-hmm. But I thought, oh, gee, I like this guy because he came to where I live and spoke. And I really liked the way he spoke. I thought, I hope he gets in. But his name was just blown off. And I didn't really get enough information.
Well,
help me in my decision for voting. Although I know who I want to vote for in that case, but I mean for voters in general. It almost sounds like don't go out and vote tomorrow.
Well, hopefully you're not
hearing encouraging encouragement for voters.
Well, I hear that. I hear you, and I appreciate you saying that. And I certainly don't want voters to not go to the polls tomorrow. In fact, one of the reasons that we wanted to do this show, Rosina, was to talk about various races and to highlight them. We can't give you all the sort of details of everyone's platform, but certainly if you need more information on the controller's race, we've got Dave Davies. Anything you want to fill in for her?
Well, I I don't think there's it's sort of practical for us in this program to go into a long discussion of these guys. And I did mention, I think that job does matter and that Terry Tracy has made an impressive showing. And what you could do, if you look at my blog at newsworks.org, it's Dave Davies off mic. There you can find a link to the audio of the debate between Terry Tracy and the incumbent Alan Butkovitz, which I moderated here at WHYY a couple of weeks ago. And I think you'll get a good feel for what both of them have to say.
Fair enough. Rosina, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Sean, let me go back to you. Another thing that I saw recently, State House Speaker Sam Smith deserves credit for the latest effort to address this. His bill would reduce the legislature by 62 members. This was an editorial in the Philadelphia Inquirer, reduce the legislature by about a quarter. I know you have been railing about this. Any chance that this would happen?
I think there is some chance that it would happen because it would take forever to take effect, and if they change it to include both chambers, both the House and the Senate, make it a gradual phase-in thing over time, and then do a constitutional amendment to change the Constitution, I think there is some chance at some point in our lifetimes. And Sam Smith has been at this before. It died once. It has a little bit of life to it now. And the reason I think that, Marty, is that every cycle we get some new members, and they tend to be younger, and they tend to be a little bit more forward-thinking than their predecessors. So I think over time, people will come to the realization that we're not the largest state in America. We don't need the largest legislature in America. It costs too much, and there's no effectiveness to have big numbers.
Well, we have to end our discussion, but Dave, I know you'll be providing some analysis tomorrow night here at WHYY.
Right, and I think we're going to be looking forward to some extent to the next big municipal election, which is the mayor's race, which is it's just a little more than a year away in terms of folks filing for the Democratic primary, and there's a long list of candidates, and that'll be worth some attention.
Indeed. Well, my thanks to both of you, as always, for joining us today in Radio Times. John Baer, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. Political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. His blog is Baer Growls. Dave Davies, thank you very much for joining us.
Great to be here.
And he's a senior reporter here at WHYY. Check out his blog, Off Mic, at the Newsworks website. Also a contributor and fill-in host for Fresh Air with Terry Gross. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. And you can learn much more about this program. Stay with us. We'll be right back.